We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal. The Solid
Verbal. Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildebrandt. That fine gentleman over there is Dan Rubenstein. Our show, as always, driven by Geico. Dan, you were out driving around earlier today. How was that for you?
Glad companies like Geico are around in case things go wrong in the snow and the muddy snow and the slick black ice that's out there in the Midwest right now. It was fine, but dicey. Ultimately fine, but dicey. Well, a couple of situations where I tried to turn going, I don't know, 4 miles an hour, where I tried to break into the turn, as we all do, and I just heard a like, brrr. I was like, oh, nope, that's not the sound that the brake is supposed to make. I'm going to keep driving straight and hope for the best next time. So, not ideal, but I'm here, and I'm in one piece.
Would you consider yourself a skilled driver in the elements, or how would you rank yourself?
No, no.
Give me a power ranking.
I'm a California driver. I'm good in big cities, comfortable in big cities. I've driven in New York. I've driven in Chicago. I've driven in a bunch of places. And I've traveled a ton. I am not good in the... If you were to ask me, how do you turn into a skid or turn out of a skid? Or what are you looking for when you're driving where you can't see lines because of snow and ice? What are the big strategies for how to... I have no idea. I turn the heater on in my car. I make sure that my windows are defrosted. I try to use my fog lights when I need to use fog lights. I try to use windshield wipers when there are elements coming down. I always do that. But in terms of like actual strategic winter weather driving, at best, we're looking at a Michigan State pass defense situation.
Ooh, okay.
I can do enough that I can put myself in a position to win. But I'm not the most dependable in those big moments.
Not a winter wonder on the roadways.
No.
You know the move that I pull. Because I feel like I am a pretty good snow driver. Now I'm
okay.
I've had a little bit more experience doing this than you.
Definitely.
But I pull the move, and Solid Wife Kate hates it. It's when there's a snowy road out there, and I pull out onto the road, and there's a fresh coating of whatever.
Mm-hmm.
There aren't any other cars around, and I gun it. She hates it. And I always justify it by saying, I'm just trying to get a feel for the roads.
Yeah, of course.
I don't know if it actually gives me a feel for the roads, but it makes me feel alive, Dan.
Throwing it deep on play number one.
F it, we're going deep.
Yeah.
And I haven't crashed yet, thankfully. And
okay.
I always do it when it's, you know, in a safe setting.
Quick disclaimer, the views of driving of Ty Hildebrandt are not necessarily reflective of the Solid Verbal or Geico.
Well, wherever you are, wherever you may be, wherever this show finds you, we hope you're safe and sound. You're doing okay. towards the latter half of January, a couple weeks now into the off season. We are the Solid Verbal. We broadcast twice per week on the public audio feed. You can also get bonus content if you're going out to verballers.com. We've been continuing the trend of our weekly Brew and A show that we record Friday around midday. We make that available again as bonus content only for our Patreon subscribers. So if you're interested, go to verballers.com. You can find out more information about what we're doing this off season. We have much that we still have the bubble wrap on at this point that we're going to gradually unveil as we get a little bit deeper into this thing, certainly as we get into the month of February. Don't forget to follow us across all of our social media channels. And of course, subscribe / follow / rate / review wherever it will let you. All of that stuff helps us get the word out to college football fans such as yourself, who might be out there in the doldrums of the offseason wondering where can we find more college football stuff to just scratch this itch that we have. Because as we're going to discuss today, Dan, just because it's the offseason does not mean that there is not a lot going on. It's
true.
It's very busy in a way that I can't ever remember it being so. Not just with the coach thing, and we could talk about maybe some of the Harbaugh rumors. I don't know if we want to get into that. But certainly with transfers and movement in the portal, we're going to try and zero in on some of that movement as part of this show, just because it's been a while, and I'm not sure how many folks out there, how many of our verballers have really had a chance to bring themselves up to speed with what's going on and actually think about and react to some of these moves and just try to make heads or tails of it.
A lot of portal takes out there, by the way. A lot of takes on the portal in general. That it is ruining the sport. Where is he now? Miami? Mario Cristobal? He had a big take about, like, is that where he went? Is that where Mario Cristobal is currently situated? Okay, so he had a take about how, look, we're dipping our toes into the NFL water, and we either have to go fully in that direction or fully back in a direction. We have to pick a direction and a destination for what we want college football to be. I suppose leaving a school without any penalty like players can now do. But no, it's all interesting because, as you know, and it's wild, wild west situations. It's schools hoping that Congress passes federal legislation that sets parameters for NIL stuff. Like, there's all this like hope of like we're going to have some sort of authority regulating, not necessarily transferring, but NIL, which is now tied to transferring because that is, you know, an appeal point for a lot of players and a lot of schools. And so all I know is things like this tend to get worked out, and a lot of people who say that they're done watching the sport end up watching the sport, and we can just sort of adjust. We can all adjust. And that's what we're trying to do on today's show. And we have no idea. We're guessing on a number of these guys because we have a game show planned. But I'm excited. I am excited for not all of the learning and relearning we have to do every summer as we figure out where everybody has gone when we preview these schools. But there is something about the novelty of movement across the sport that is a detriment certainly to a number of teams, but it's also teams improving their lot in the sport and players improving their lot in the sport. And I saw our friend Bud Elliott, I guess as it relates to the NFL playoffs, like, do we get Joe Burrow without he was a grad transfer, but the idea of bettering a situation and bettering a fit. And it's a good question. He had graduated from Ohio State, I believe, so it's slightly different than the transfer portal, but It is worth asking because there is the light at the end of the tunnel for a lot of these guys. The pot of gold at the end of the rainbow is the NFL. And they're just, it's everybody trying to put themselves in the best possible position for succeeding in college football to get noticed by guys at the next level, or just they want to play and they just made a wrong choice. And so we're zooming in on the quarterbacks on this episode, but it's, I don't know. I'm trying to find the fascination part of this rather than the doom and gloom.
Yeah, we're going to be sending out a giant FU to all the quarterbacks who have transferred. And I mean that literally. We'll talk about that momentarily. Not in a pejorative way, of course.
Yeah.
But we do want to talk very quickly about the Harbaugh rumors. I don't think we've had a chance to address that on the podcast. We may have alluded to it along the way. But at some point between recording our last show, releasing our last show, and now getting together as we do this midday on a Monday afternoon, Bruce Feldman, our good friend from The Athletic, tweets out that per some of his sources, there are many folks in the Michigan establishment who believe that if Jim Harbaugh is offered a job by the Raiders, he's gone.
Right.
He's going to take it. Now, the Raiders have been out of the playoffs for a week. They lost in round one in the super wild card round. There haven't been any NFL coaches, to my knowledge, and I'm not an NFL analyst by any stretch, but I am a Giants fan, so I've been paying attention to what's going on in the coaching world. There haven't been any moves announced in terms of coach hires. There have been GMs and things like that.
Right.
But it seems as if we are still sort of waiting for any kind of momentum in that arena. It could happen quickly. It happened very quickly on the college front. So if it's going to go down with Harbaugh, my sense is that we're going to hear about it, and then hours later, it's going to be confirmed. But your thoughts very quickly on Jim Harbaugh leaving, Jim Harbaugh potentially leaving in his absence something of a void for a good program, and what happens
Big
if
Ten
he leaves?
Champion. Yeah.
What happens if he leaves? Who takes that job?
Yeah. I mean, so there's two schools of thought here. The first school of thought is taking the story at face value, which there's no reason not to. I thought it was our pal Bruce Feldman saying, making that report. And Michigan fans say, oh, Bruce isn't connected at Michigan. He's always wrong. I don't know.
Bruce is a big game hunter.
Yeah. And also, the story can be true. And Jim Harbaugh returned to Michigan, that Jim Harbaugh was considering the Raiders, and, you know, the frustrations of college football can be a lot for head coaches who have NFL experience, a place where they can just focus on stalking a team through the draft and free agency and worrying about football things like hiring coaches and winning games. And Jim Harbaugh has a good amount of successful experience doing that in the NFL. The other line of thinking, of course, is he took a pay cut and his contract turned into a more incentive-laden deal before this season. And now that he has taken Michigan to the playoff and decisively beaten Ohio State, won the Big Ten, you know, won the Big Ten championship going away, right? 42-3. They left no doubt in Indy that, wow, okay, I should be paid. And I know he's had quotes saying that, like, it's just money or whatever, but there is a pride thing where, like, I want to be considered among college football's best coaches and paid accordingly. And I know at one point he was representing himself. I think I saw that he has now representatives talking to the school. So for the sake of college football, I hope he returns to Michigan and is able to keep building. But we've talked about this a little bit before, that college football is not necessarily going to become more of a young man's coaching game, but it's going to become more of a coach who can adapt on the fly to the transfer portal stuff, to the NIL stuff, to the competing with what Ohio State is doing on the recruiting trail, what Penn State just did on the recruiting trail. And if Jim Harbaugh looks at that in a way that, you know, I think most recently Chris Peterson looked at it and said, you know what? I love coaching football. I don't know if I love all of this other stuff.
Yeah.
And for Chris Peterson, it was moving on to retirement and a new role, TV stuff. For Jim Harbaugh, it would be the NFL, presumably. I know, you know, the Dolphins owner said, you know, Stephen Ross, who's a big Michigan guy, said he wasn't going to be the one who hires Jim Harbaugh away. But yeah, Las Vegas, attractive place to live, a lot warmer than Ann Arbor, a lot of, you know, money to be thrown his direction from Mark Davis, is Al Davis' son. So I get it. I definitely get it. I would imagine he's going to be back. That's where that's my guess. That is my guess, but I have no idea.
I think he's leaving.
Okay, you think he's gonzo. You think the Raiders are saying, we got this guy, he has sentimental ties to the organization, and Jim Harbaugh can walk away saying, I left this place better than how I found it. I'm leaving them a playoff program.
I think he's leaving, Dan. If you look at his track record,
yeah,
he hasn't been in any one job for longer than 5 years. Well, longer than he's been at Michigan. I mean, this has been the longest tenure. But before that, only 4 or 5 years on the job. He was very successful with the San Francisco 49ers. He was only with them for 4 seasons. You're a Niners fan. You recall those teams.
Of course.
I think from the moment he stepped foot on campus, there were rumors that, okay, this is a guy who eventually is going to end up back in the NFL. And there was some scuttlebutt before this past season that maybe he would make the jump then because of the way things seem to be headed on the Michigan front. Now he's gotten them to a point where he took the pay cut. He went to the playoff. they're either going to have to put up the money to retain him, or even putting up the money won't be enough to retain him. Maybe he's just ready for another challenge. Again, yep. That is sort of more his MO based on his track record in the past. So I think there will be opportunities for Harbaugh if he's interested. What I'm most interested in is what happens if he decides to go, because
right.
In a year where we saw so much movement on the coaching carousel from big programs, not mm-hmm. just leaving small schools to go to big programs, I'm talking movement among big programs. This right. would definitely be another circumstance where it puts Michigan in a very difficult spot. It's late in the recruiting game. It's late in the cycle. Some of the names that I've seen, and again, this is just speculation. We don't know. But
sure.
I saw
great job.
Mike Hart, the running backs coach, Josh Gattis, obviously offensive coordinator, Mike McCarthy. Perhaps he'd be somebody who would follow Harbaugh into the NFL if he were to decide to go. But he would
Mike
be a
McDonald,
name.
You mean?
Mike McDonald, yeah. What did
Mike
I say?
Mike McCarthy is the current coach of the Dallas Cowboys?
Yeah. Mike McCarthy. Okay. Not Mike McCarthy. Mike McDonald,
yeah.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
Also, I saw some reports of Matt Rhule.
Saw that. Yep.
Which would be a slam dunk, I think, by any measure in the college ranks. Matt Campbell, another guy who's sort of geographically centered around that same Midwestern area. Mm-hmm. I'm just throwing names at the wall, but these are some of the names that have been reported. Supposedly Rhule would be at the top of that list per some published reports on CBS Sports, but a lot to come on this front. As you said, I hope for the sake of college football, it's not the kind of thing where we end up having to replace that gig at Michigan, but more to come on that front for sure.
Yeah, the names connected to Michigan at the moment, McDonald and Gattis and Hart that are at Michigan right now, all under 40. I think Mike Hart's about 35, Gattis about 38, McDonald 34-ish, something like that. And so you would be taking, and not, you know, we've seen what, you know, Oregon and Notre Dame have done with inexperienced guys yeah. under 40 leading major programs. I think you just get Matt Rhule. Now, the downside of Matt Rhule, who was allegedly like zeroed in on Penn State, his alma mater, if James Franklin were to leave for a job like, you know, USC, LSU, whatever like that, when there were all those rumors flying around. The issue with Matt Rhule is he locked in on what it takes to win at Michigan in 2022-2023? He was notoriously, both at Temple and when he was at a Power 5 job in Baylor, notoriously, I don't care about recruiting stars. I care about character and development, which is awesome. But you don't beat Ohio State like that. Right. And I think what Jim Harbaugh has done with this program, and now Matt Rhule is not that guy anymore, and Matt Rhule will adapt to, you know, the difference between being at Michigan and being at Baylor. These are, there's a disparity between those programs in terms of blue chippy, blue bloodiness, whatever. But does Matt Rhule have a stubborn streak to how he wants to win? I don't know. I think that would be an amazing hire for Michigan, but I would like to see more movement on that front, because he was very adamant in that way of thinking that like, we don't care about recruiting rankings. We don't care about that kind of stuff. I'm honest. I don't promise it. Like, okay. But you need great players to be a great team.
Sure.
And so I'd be curious. I'd be curious to see if Michigan goes in that direction or if they stay in house for the sake of continuity, which is not a good move. I mean, if they think Josh Gattis, who just won the Broyles Award, has the vision and what it takes to lead Michigan, then hire Josh Gattis. But don't do it for the sake of one class or, oh, he understands Michigan, because that's how you become Texas or USC or Miami or something like that.
What concerns me about the Rhule hire.
Yeah.
On the surface, by the way, Matt Rhule's a great hire. You can get Matt Rhule to replace Jim Harbaugh.
Oh, 100%.
That's pretty good. You'll feel pretty good about that. My concern from the Michigan side of things is that I honestly believe Matt Rhule is going to be the next coach at Penn State. And I don't know when that's
going to... he's waiting on that?
I'm not going to say he's waiting on it. I don't think he's waiting on it. I think he's got certainly enough credibility as a college coach at this point that he could jump back in if and when he decides to do so in the college ranks at a moment's notice. There are a zillion programs that would take him tomorrow. Fire their coach, we'll take Matt Rhule, right?
Mm-hmm.
I believe that's the job he wants. He's from State College. He went to Penn State. He's got roots there. I think that's a job he wants. I heard, amid all the rumors swirling during the coaching carousel the first time around with James Franklin, that if he left, he was the guy Penn State was going after.
Yeah.
Some had reported mutual interest. I think there's a lot of smoke there, and I believe it. I really do believe it. And so is this a guy who would take the Michigan gig, James Franklin leaves in 3 years because of the weird contract setup that he's got with the buyout dropping? Penn State's got an opening. Would Rule jump back to Penn State? I believe he would.
Yeah. It's got to be a dream job for him. Yeah.
That from that standpoint, that would concern me as a Michigan fan. But nonetheless, look, if Harbaugh leaves in February, you'll take whatever you can get, right? If you can get Matt Rule, if you can get Josh Gattis, like I think both of those are pretty good moves. So we'll see. A lot to come on this. Again, this is all a great amount of speculation.
Yep.
But it is worth monitoring if you're a college football fan, because this could be another big shoe to drop.
Yeah. And both of those schools, by the way, Michigan and Penn State, depending on what you believe, it's Drew. How do you pronounce his name? The quarterback of the future.
Allar.
Okay, so depending on what you believe about Drew Allar and what you believe about J.J. McCarthy, two schools that have clear quarterbacks of the future. So there's obviously going to be attraction there between any coach and a program of that size. And we'll see. Yeah, it's fascinating. And I don't love a crazy amount of change, but I love new things to talk about. Like, did you see who Texas hired? Who did Texas hire? Did you see new special assistant to the head coach? Like advisor consultant type. Gary Patterson.
Okay.
Gary Patterson's going to be wearing burnt orange for the time being.
He's going to be sweating through that burnt orange, making it look a little bit more burnt.
Proving if you pretty much always beat him, you can also join him. And that's what Gary Patterson did. So, yeah, there's that for Texas. And that was certainly a defense that, and I think Pete Kwiatkowski is a very, very good defensive coach, no matter what we talked about on the Message Board Geniuses show, in which a Texas message board poster challenged him to a fight of some kind to determine the future of the Texas defense. I think, smart defensive minds in plural in a room can only be a good thing for a defense that needs a lot of work.
Daniel, on today's show, as I mentioned earlier, we're sending out a bunch of Fs, maybe not U's.
That's true.
To this class of quarterback transfers via the portal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You came up with this game. You're the game show specialist.
That's true.
On this here podcast. Three Fs that are going to be in play as we go through any great number of guys who've decided to go elsewhere, quarterbacks who've decided to go elsewhere. Explain this game.
Okay, so the name of the game is Faith, Fit, or Flop.
Great sound.
I love alliteration. It really does it for me.
Love it.
Faith, Fit, or Flop, and it's basically taking, we have a long list of pretty well-known quarterbacks who transferred. We posted a very handy map on Instagram and Twitter last week, I think, around a week and a half ago. And just drawing arrows from old school to new school, like it would be like an airline destination map that you'd see at the back of a magazine when you're seated on the plane. And look, there's a lot of big names moving all over the country. And so I wanted to determine what we as a show, or we, you know, go different directions with. Faith being, look, I can see this guy succeeding because it's a new start, it's new coaches, it's a new system, it's better players around him, right? A better offensive line in front of him, better receivers to throw to, better scheme, whatever, that you have faith that it should succeed. Fit is like, no, this is obvious. This is turnkey. This is white glove service. This guy was a star here for these reasons. He's going to a new school that's an even better situation for him, seemingly. Great receivers to throw to, great coaches, great relationship, great offensive line. Like, this is just, you know, from day one, it's going to be magic. Or flop being kind of a transfer for the sake of transfer. It wasn't working out, needed somewhere to go. Yeah. You know, this school lost all of their receivers to transfer and they needed to fill the room. They needed to fill the roster and quarterbacks just haven't succeeded there. And there's no real reason to feel like this new guy is the guy to turn things around. And so I hesitate to use the word flop, right? We're judging somebody in not even February who's made this move. But for the sake of this show and for the sake of alliteration, that's the word I came up with. And as always, we are happy to be and thrilled to be absolutely wrong in cases like these.
Faith, fit, or flop? Why don't we start? Oh, thank you. Let's start with your boy, your new boy, Bo Nix.
My new guy, yeah.
So let me set the table here. for people who are listening, maybe just stragglers coming through, what's this podcast? What are these knuckleheads doing a college football podcast on January 25th?
Uh-huh.
Let me set the table for the new Verballers among us.
Yeah.
Dan spent the last 3 years, two years, sort of downplaying the Bo Nix thing. Now, admittedly, I got a little too excited about Bo Nix after his very first start. It was, I forget who they played.
His very first place, they beat Oregon.
They beat Oregon.
In Texas.
Okay, that's right.
Last second. Yeah.
Thanks for
bringing that up.
It was his first game. He was a legacy. Everybody was excited about Bo Nix. He's going to be the next great quarterback at Auburn.
Number one in his class.
And he was green in that game. No pun intended. Mm-hmm. But it took him a while to get warmed up. He pulled some late heroics. And it was those late heroics that started to build the mystique of Bo Nix. Mm-hmm. Bo Nix never really lived up to that hype, to that billing, right? He was good and he had moments. And last year, before he got hurt, I thought he was pretty good. He was a different Bo Nix. He's more efficient and more responsible with the football. There was a lot to like there. But then he got hurt and the Auburn season went sideways and whatever. I was more of a fan of Bo Nix the whole way through than you. You were always very blasé on this kid as a quarterback.
Yeah.
Now you got him.
Mm-hmm.
Now he's yours.
Yeah.
How do you feel?
I'm going with faith. I'm not going with full fit. I'm not going with full flop. I'm going with faith because I think he's going to have a better offensive line. They return, I believe, the entirety of their offensive line, Oregon does. So a better situation than what he had at Auburn. I think his receivers are going to be better at Oregon. You know, Troy Franklin, Dante Thornton, the younger guys who showed out later on in the season are back. The running game, even though Travis Dye transferred to USC, I don't know the status of C.J. Verdell at the moment, but Byron Cardwell is going to be good. Auburn could run. You know, Tank Bigsby was very good. But my reason for faith is he has this previous relationship with Kenny Dillingham, who was at Auburn a couple years ago and came to Oregon via Florida State. Has never called plays and been like the guy at offensive coordinator. But I think there is something about getting away from the expectations and that fishbowl, given that he was a legacy at Auburn and the expectations were what they were, given the win over Oregon, the win over Alabama, if you remember, behind two pick sixes that Auburn was able to generate. But at the same time, I think there is something about the expectations at Oregon are be good, win a bunch of games, but not be the perfect all-time player, given that he was the number one recruit for Auburn and was that legacy. So I think it's set up, given where the Pac-12 is, especially the Pac-12 North, Washington new coach, Wazoo new full-time coach, Cal has been down, Stanford has been super down, Oregon State is interesting, but they're not, you know, crazy talented. That defense is a long ways away. So I think just in terms of the defenses he'll be facing and the offense around him, I think it's a good spot. Now, they do open with Georgia. A different looking Georgia team who's down like everybody from the national championship team other than Stetson Bennett. So they do open with Georgia, so we'll learn a lot pretty quickly. But yeah, I have faith that he can look more like what he did in three of those four final games of 2021 than what he's looked like in some of his more down moments, namely, God, that the Georgia game and the A&M game last year come to mind. So I have faith that he will be pretty good. Not amazing, pretty good.
Why don't they just go with Ty Thompson?
I think you know the answer. If they're going after a big name quarterback transfer, he's not ready or he's not good enough. I don't know.
I don't think Bo Nix is the answer. I'm going flop.
Okay. That's fair.
I've seen the light on Bo Nix. I've seen what he brings to the equation. I think he's improved.
Yeah.
I think he was improved for sure this past season. But if you compare him to what they had, is this Anthony Brown?
When? What they had when?
Is this Anthony Brown with maybe fewer interceptions and a little less speed?
I think he's very similar to Anthony Brown in terms of strengths and weaknesses, right? Playmaker, but at the same time,
that's my point. Do you want more of that? Do you think that's a good thing?
Look, if you polled Oregon fans and said, do you want a better version of Anthony Brown? Oregon fans would say, yep, cool, fine.
Anthony Brown beat Ohio State on the road.
Oregon beat Ohio State on the road. Yeah.
I don't know. I just, this didn't make sense to me. It didn't make sense to me. I get it. Maybe you play a year under Brian Harsin, you get hurt, you have an opportunity to go elsewhere. The previous relationship, right? Like all these things factor in. It's more of a complex decision than might meet the eye.
Yeah.
But this is one I don't get. I don't know. If I were an Oregon fan, I would want no part of Bo Nix.
Okay, fair enough. We disagree. Next name.
Michael Penix Jr. Michael Penix Jr. transfers away from Indiana. He's going to Washington. The reason I presume he is going to Washington is because Michael Penix had his breakout season under the tutelage of one Kalen DeBoer when he was coordinating the offense for Tom Allen in Indiana. Kalen DeBoer since moved on to Fresno and now was named the head football coach at Washington, Dan.
Yeah.
The question is this. The question is reuniting with Kalen DeBoer going to be enough to turn Michael Penix's career around in any great way? Or is this just a convenient connection that got a transfer to Washington from Indiana, but ultimately is going to be a flop?
I think it's closer to the latter. I think at his best, he's a very good quarterback, but the combination of inconsistencies and just getting hurt a lot, I have him down as a flop. I know it's going to sound like an Oregon fan assessing Washington's quarterback situation as such. I think he can be very good, but again, we're all choosing to remember the dive against Penn State that won the game and what he was able to do against Ohio State and not the totality of his career. So I have him down as a flop. You can file this away as happy to be wrong about it because it would be a very cool story to see his career rejuvenated. But I just think there's a reason why he couldn't get it together at Indiana and going to a program like Washington. I don't know if that's a difference maker in a first year system, losing what they do on the offensive line and a really down situation at receiver. I like Jalen McMillan, but otherwise, I don't know. I don't think this receiving core is going to, you know, improve the play of a quarterback and make him look better than he actually is.
Yeah, I think I'm inclined to go faith here. And it's because the starting point's a little bit different. Penix was hurt.
Yeah.
And I think the times that we saw him this past season, he was bad.
he was
really bad. So
that's a problem.
Turnovers.
That's a problem, right?
He's inconsistent and the injury bug has definitely gotten him more than once in some pretty severe ways, which sucks for him because he's clearly a playmaker.
Yeah.
I have faith that reuniting with Kalen DeBoer, hopefully being put in a situation where maybe there's some more talent.
He might not
him.
Even start. They still Sam Heward, the quarterback of the future. Yeah.
So I feel like he will be put in a situation where they're not asking too much of him, if at all. And so from that standpoint, I have faith that if nothing more for Washington, it's a way to build some depth on the depth chart. It's a playmaker who, you know, has moxie late in the game. Somebody who's done that time and again. I agree with you. I don't think they're going to necessarily look to plug and play, make him the starter from day one. But if you're Kalen DeBoer, if you could bring in a guy that you know from your previous stint, if you know that you can put him on the depth chart and at least have something serviceable to go to, I don't think that's a bad thing. So I have faith that this is an okay move, even if it's not a headliner.
All right, next QB.
Keaton Slovis is moving on from USC. He's going to Pitt. Pitt, of course, is going to be without Kenny Pickett. Kenny Pickett, presumably going to be a first-round draft pick. Had a great year.
Yep.
This is an interesting move, Dan, isn't it?
I think it makes a lot of sense. Now, Pitt down, I don't really care that much about Mark Whipple. He goes to Nebraska and hiring a new offensive coordinator. I believe they re-brought in Frank Cignetti from Boston College, who was at Pitt a while back, and he takes over there. I have this as a fit. I have a Keaton Slovis situation as buy low. I never liked the USC offense, especially when they were in full pack it up, pack it in mode, probably the entirety of these past 2 years, really. But seriously, this last year, obviously. I think a fresh start, and he's making the Max Brown move from USC to Pitt. But Biletnikoff guy and Jordan Addison, Jared Wayne, like the offensive line, I believe, returns intact, if not mostly intact. Like, I think everything is there for Keaton Slovis to just exhale and just bomb it downfield. Like, he was able to connect to Drake London in that way. I don't think there's any reason he can't spread the ball around, unless he is the, like, locks in too much on one guy type of quarterback. But I think everything is there, especially with the where Pitt's defense should be once again. I think he's going to be a really nice addition. He's not going to be Kenny Pickett, but he's going to be a worthwhile approximation of what Kenny Pickett was able to do last year.
I like the move.
Yeah.
I like the move a lot, especially given the track record with Pat Narduzzi and defense. Now, that being said, qualifier.
Yeah.
Defense
for whatever
was,
reason, by the way, as whenever Pitt's defense was really good, offense was a nightmare.
I know.
Whenever
I
Pitt's
know.
Offense was pretty, like James Conner, Nate Peterman, impressive, defense was weirdly below average.
That was going to be
strange.
My point.
Yeah.
That was
going
to be my point from this past season. Now, I wouldn't say it was below average, but there were qualities to the defense that were very asymmetric, right? It wasn't through and through a
correct.
Brick wall like we've seen in some points in the past with Pat Narduzzi. But
right.
all that being said, I think Keaton Slovis steps into a situation with Pitt where you could pretty much make an assumption from day one the defense will be better than what he had at SC, because the SC defense was very soft. That
yep.
was Mr. Softy soft.
Mm-hmm.
So it will be a different situation. I think that will put him in a situation where he doesn't have to do it all.
Right.
And he's got talent on offense. The Jordan Addison thing, just having him on your team, it's a big deal. They'll find ways to run the ball. I think it's a really nice landing spot for him. It really seems like it makes a lot of sense. So I like this one. I've also got it down as a fit. Can you play the fit sound just to remind me what that sounds like? It just feels good to hear that sound. Those sonic tones bouncing around in your ears.
All right. So we agree. I'm going to go to another quarterback, Ty. How about that? Why don't we go Dillon Gabriel at Oklahoma? Are we as enthusiastic, even more enthusiastic? Now, Oklahoma certainly down Caleb Williams. Don't know where he's going, so he's not included in this at the time of recording for sure. But also down Mario Williams. Now, they keep their offensive line coach in Bill Bedenbaugh, who is as well regarded as any offensive line coach in the country. Presumably, defense will improve. Dillon Gabriel, really impressive track record of bombing it downfield, especially with Josh Heupel when he was the head coach there in Orlando at UCF. Dillon Gabriel, to me, feels as turnkey as it gets, even with last year's downish offensive line. There is something about his game that I think is going to translate really, really well to the Big 12 in Oklahoma. Just with a new coach, with Jeff Lebby. Like, I think so many of the pieces are there. I don't know that they necessarily have the depth of talent at receiver. You know, Mario Williams moves on to USC, but Marvin Mims still there. I don't know, man. I'm just in on it.
I'm a little
Coming off a collarbone injury. I get that too. Yeah.
I'm a little concerned on two fronts.
Okay.
For me, the answer is faith. This is not going to be a flop.
Right.
I just don't have enough information to know for sure that it's going to be a fit. I think Dillon Gabriel's very good.
Right.
I am concerned about the injuries. You mentioned the collarbone. I'm also concerned about what this team looks like on offense.
Sure.
Brent Venables, a first-time head coach. Brings over Jeff Lebby. We know about the previous relationship between him and Gabriel. That obviously played a big part of the reason why he ended up there in Norman. But given the transfers, given the fact that they're kind of starting over, they've got the line, which is a good place to land if you're a quarterback.
Right.
But we sort of don't know what it's going to look like. I feel like there will probably be some growing pains early for Oklahoma. I hope I'm wrong. I mean, the talent is still,
right.
even given the transfers, there's still a lot of talent there. This is not a situation where they're bleeding out. They'll be just fine long term. But I just don't feel like I have enough information to sit here and say fit. It feels like fit. I have a great deal of faith that this is a good move. It seems like, though Oklahoma will look very different next year, that they will still be very good.
Mm-hmm.
But to what extent is it a pure fit, like a glove? Like, this is more of a faith-based play for me right now.
Here are the defenses that Dillon Gabriel, presumed starter for Oklahoma, will be facing in 2022, if he is the guy starting the the job at quarterback. UTEP, Kent State at Nebraska should be difficult. Kansas State at home, we'll see. At TCU, they were atrocious last year and have a new coach. Texas, of course, in the Cotton Bowl, that was an atrocious defense. You could throw on Texas a good amount. Maybe they'll be improved this year. Kansas at Iowa State should be good, but lose a good chunk of players. Baylor should be improved at West Virginia. We'll see. Oklahoma State with a new coordinator. We'll see. I think it's Derek Mason is the presumed or announced name for Oklahoma State taking over there. And the Texas Tech defense under new ownership and guidance. So in terms of killers that doesn't exist in the non-conference portion of the schedule, I think it's set up to succeed pretty well.
Offense. Counterpoint to everything I just said.
Yeah.
Dylan Gabriel's played 26 games of college football over 3 years. 70 touchdowns to just 14 interceptions.
Mm.
A slightly north of 60% completion percentage. The kid's got it. I mean, he's very good.
Yeah, of course.
He's very, very good. And so if you're Oklahoma, it hurts to lose Caleb Williams. By the way, we can't give that a faith or a fit or a flop or anything because we don't know where he's going. We presume USC, but we don't know that for sure yet.
Right.
But to have that kind of productivity coming into Norman, you will take that.
Anybody
will take that. UCLA thought they had that before he untransferred to UCLA and decided to go to Norman.
Yeah, truly. How many programs would be improved by adding Dylan Gabriel atop their quarterback depth chart? Pretty much all.
90% of them, if not more.
Yeah, at least. Yeah. So, yeah, total fit to me.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about all from the comfort of your home isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Where do you want to go next?
Let's talk about Quinn Ewers.
Okay, let's do that.
Quinn Ewers transfers after one season from Ohio State, goes to his native state of Texas, signs on with Steve Sarkisian. He was previously the number one overall recruit. He committed early. He signed on early with Ohio State. It seemed as if, given what happened with C.J. Stroud, the writing was on the wall fairly early that Quinn Ewers was going to be looking for a new destination. He has made it official. He is going to Texas. Now, Texas at the quarterback position in year one under Steve Sarkisian was a very interesting story to tell. We saw a little bit of Hudson Card early. We saw a lot of Casey Thompson later. We saw more of Hudson Card throughout the course of the season. Clearly, none of them were really the answer. I don't know if it was any of their fault specifically, but Casey Thompson has decided that he's going elsewhere. We can talk about him later in this show.
He was beat up. I think he hurt his thumb or his hand or something. Yeah,
absolutely. But he has since decided to go to Nebraska. Hudson Card, I guess, still there. But Quinn Ewers, I think, presumably will be your day one starter.
Likely.
Quinn Ewers comes with much acclaim being so he was the number one overall recruit, being so he is from the great state of Texas. He steps into a role now where he's got a good running back around him. He's got, I think, a breakout, a standout wide receiver in Xavier Worthy.
Isaiah Nair coming in from Wyoming was one of the big name receiver transfers too as well. Yep, continue, sorry.
So it's a good setup for Quinn Ewers, provided that Steve Sarkisian can find a way to get that offense playing a little bit harder. There were moments where they were very soft this past year.
Yep.
And secondly, more consistently. What do you think about this Quinn Ewers move? Do you like it? Do you have faith? Do you think it's a fit? Do you think it's a flop?
I have faith because I've never seen him throw a pass in college football. So I can't say like, oh, Adrian Martinez has done this at Nebraska, or Casey Thompson has done this at Texas, or Dylan Gabriel, Michael. You can't have anything but faith because you have no idea what Quinn Ewers is like in a major college football game. So I have faith. I have positive faith. I have advanced faith, whatever you want to say, that he is going to be a successful guy because of Sark's background in developing quarterbacks, because of Xavier Worthy. My issue is, I guess the issue for Texas, offensive line. Now, they hit it really, really hard in this recruiting class, highlighted by Kelvin Banks, who decommitted from Oregon when Mario Cristobal left. And he's from Texas. He's going to be, you know, in line for significant playing time, I assume, as a five-star freshman offensive line. But they just, the depth of the class at offensive line is quite impressive in Austin. I don't have the faith that that issue is getting solved, at least in the first half of 2022. So my faith is he is good enough to overcome it. But I don't know, man. Quarterback was an issue last year. It's hard to ignore, or the offense was an issue. We talked about the defense needing a lot of help and Gary Patterson coming in or whatever. You look at those stretches of three and outs last year against good teams, against not so good teams. Like, the Texas offense was very hot and cold. So my faith is that it will be improved with a full offseason of figuring out, you know, what went wrong. But at the same time, I don't know. I mean, Quinn Ewers enrolled early. He is and like an actual true freshman by age right now, or whatever, by experience. So I guess it's going to be successful, but I'm not ready to pencil it in like I am with somebody like Dylan Gabriel. So, or even Keaton Slovis. So I'm faith given his physical talent and what the ceiling could be given Steve Sarkisian's background. But no, I'm not full fit.
It's not going to be a flop.
I don't believe so.
It's not going to be a flop. And I think if you're a Texas fan, that makes you feel the best. What you're looking for, I suppose, is a guy who can come in and take you to another level. But frankly, I don't know if quarterback has been the problem at Texas.
Right.
You'll, of course, take the number one overall recruit. The quarterback, the kid from, you know, the same state. Like, you'll take Quinn Ewers. Of course you'll take Quinn Ewers. And I think he will give them more upside for sure. He presumably is a much better prospect than Hudson Card and Casey Thompson. I'm not telling you folks out there anything you don't already know.
Right.
That's obvious. But I guess to your point, the question is what happens around him? What happens around him? Because in this sort of long wait for Texas to be quote unquote back, it's become apparent that the problem, it's broader than just one position. All right, you got to get better on the lines. You got to get better on defense. You got to get better at tackling in the open field. They've struggled with that.
Sure.
Now for the last 5 years, right? Maybe longer. So I have faith that this will be a good move. But to your point, we don't have the past productivity in Quinn Ewers the way we do with a Dylan Gabriel, the way that we do with a Bo Nix even. You know, we know what we have with Bo Nix, but we still don't really know what we have with Quinn Ewers. We've got a lot of great tape from high school, and we've got some footage of him practicing in college. But beyond that, it's really a leap of faith. And I think to label it as anything other than that is sort of being irresponsible.
I'll take exception with one thing you said. I think quarterback has been an issue for Texas.
It has been an issue.
It's an issue, right? It goes deeper than quarterback, but you watch what the Iowa State game last year, watch the West Virginia game last year, you watch the TCU game last year, you watch the second half of the Oklahoma. Like, there were quarterback issues. There were, like, even the back part, there were stretches of Sam Ellinger's time where just like slowly developing shallow cross. That's what we're settling for in every big spot. That was an issue. That was an absolute issue.
It was an issue, but looking back to the Ellinger era, part of the issue was also that you'll recall the last year of Tom Herman. They didn't use Bijan Robinson at all.
Not as much as they should have.
They didn't use him at all. They used him late. They didn't use him enough early. And there was a lot of speculation like, hey, if we just give this kid the ball 30 times a game, where would that Texas program have been? Would they have moved on from Herman at all? I think a big part of the reason why, and you're right to point out Ellinger, big part of the reason why that didn't work was because the offense was entirely based around what he could do for them.
Right.
If he didn't have it, they weren't going to win. This is the way the system was set up. And I don't think we saw quite that level of asymmetry in the offense, if you will, this past year. Like, they tried to be a little bit more balanced, but for sure there were quarterback issues. It's just not solely dependent on the quarterback. When we asked this question, is Texas going to be back next year?
Right.
There's just a lot going on. It's going to take a little bit. Quinn Ewers can be a big part of the solution there, for sure.
Totally.
And I hope that he will be for Texas fans, but I think it would be unfair to say that, you know, it's all depending on him to get them back to that promised land.
Now, the counterpoint to making the fit argument is, if Quinn Ewers, if you are to believe that Quinn Ewers is in fact the supernova that he has been evaluated to be in terms of raw talent, that rises everything. That brings everything up around you. Like, you look at the issues that Clemson now has that we didn't really see when Trevor Lawrence was there. When you are so good at quarterback, when you are so confident and so talented and so ready for this level, when you are ready for the moment, the offensive line issues don't mean as much. The receiver issues don't mean as much if you throw an exceedingly catchable and perfect ball in an anticipatory way. That if he is that supernova, which we don't have reason fully to believe yet, because Clemson was a much more finished product when Trevor Lawrence arrived, especially at receiver, then Quinn Ewers is an absolute white glove fit. He's ready to roll. But I'm just not there. I'm just not there. But I could understand why Texas could still have the issues, some of which on offense that they've had, and he is so incredible that it doesn't fully matter.
That's the thing, by the way, that can happen and does happen all the time in college.
Yeah.
As we're recording this, the NFL playoffs are going on and there are plenty of standouts on all of the teams, all four of the teams remaining. Mm-hmm. But you can't just do it all. Even if you're Patrick Mahomes, like, you can't just singularly win a game because you are a supreme talent in the NFL.
Right.
At least not to the same extent that you can in college.
Patrick Mahomes lost that game, by the way, right? That he and Baker Mayfield had the duel.
Yeah.
Right? It was like some sort of like 700 total yards in a losing effort. He ended up losing that game. So, yeah, your point is a wise one.
But in college, you can have that standout who can absolutely elevate the quality of your program.
Yeah. I mean, that's why we said Nick Foles in a losing effort, right? There is a ceiling. It can be capped. But, man, yeah, it's tantalizing.
Let's move on. Let's talk about Max Johnson.
Oh, I went back. I could have gone make the case for all three on this one. I love it. Let's talk.
Max Johnson has decided, son of former NFL quarterback Brad Johnson, the lefty, the southpaw, kind of slender, decided he is moving on from LSU. He is taking his talents to College Station, Texas A&M. So this is part of a weird carousel of quarterback transfers, because Texas A&M had their own quarterback, their backup quarterback, but their starter for a good chunk of the season after Haynes King went down. Zach Calzada transferring to Auburn, meaning there is something of an opening, at least a temporary opening, in College Station. Max Johnson decides he is leaving LSU. He is going to College Station, Texas A&M instead. Now, you and I feel like we've locked horns a bit over this move. I don't think Max Johnson's that good.
Right.
And that kind of underpins my entire argument here. But that being said, it's a good situation at Texas A&M. There's a lot of talent around him at Texas A&M. They're about to sign the best college football recruiting class in the history of college football recruiting classes.
Yeah.
So that's a pretty good landing place. And you've got a guy in Jimbo Fisher who's been atop the mountain before. He knows how to coach quarterbacks. It just feels like across the board, my opinion of Max Johnson aside, you are stepping foot into a very stable situation, which I think is a transfer. As a transfer, that's a pretty good place to be.
Yeah, I mean, A&M is almost as good as Arkansas, Mississippi State now. With authority, with confidence, I can say that. Now, this look, Texas A&M was knocking on the door of the playoff a year and a half ago. So I am I'm fully ready to say that A&M is a more stable situation than LSU, that the quarterback situation in terms of coaching, in terms of, you know, Anaya Smith, like there are guys on the field that can make plays. Question is Max athletic enough and does he have the arm to overcome? I think Texas A&M finished in the hundreds in terms of pressure rate allowed. The offensive line was at times pretty suspect for the Aggies last year. If there was a weakness to that offense, it was there. Same can be said of LSU. And Max Johnson struggled beyond that line. They allowed a lot of pressure situations at LSU. That is Max Johnson able to ascend to, and I'm using physical traits here, I don't think it's a one-to-one analog, like, could he be the best of Alex Hornibrook?
Mm.
Right? That lefty who is accurate enough, who can lean on the running game, who can lean on, maybe not the running game's not there, but like the athleticism at receiver and the creativity of the coaching staff, which I know a lot of A&M fans were kind of displeased with the play calling last year. Like, is Max Johnson talented enough to take what I think will be better coaching in a more solid situation to merely be impressively above average? I'm not there. I have it as a flop.
Wow.
I need if I want the best of Max Johnson, I want everything around him to be ideal, which is what I think Alex Hornibrook had at his best in Madison, handing the ball off to who he was handing it off to behind the line he was behind. When the arm talent isn't necessarily there and the athleticism isn't fully there, he's kind of a playmaker, an improviser. I don't know. Not for me. The situation.
I'm not the biggest fan of Max Johnson.
Right.
I was initially. Mm-hmm. So when they turned it over to him, I guess towards the latter half of 2020, amid the COVID year, he clearly showed flashes of being a big game quarterback. Like, there were moments,
sure,
in that first season for him where he was really good and he got the job done. And there was a lot of discussion about, does this kid have an X factor?
Right.
He doesn't have the arm talent. He doesn't. There are some moments like Bryant Moniz style ducks,
sure,
that he's floating out there, which, as long as he puts the ball on time and where it needs to be, that's fine. But that concerns me in the SEC. It just does.
Yeah.
A lot of quick cornerbacks. I don't know how I feel about that. But nonetheless, he, I think, can win games. I think putting him in a good situation where if you're not looking on him to win the game solely for you, if you can rely on him to be an effective game manager, to move the ball around, put it where it needs to be, I think he could be very effective. I'm not going to say flop.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say flop. There is some measure of faith and fit here. And depending on which way the wind blows, I could be convinced of either. But I think it's a fit, if only because the situation is so good. That as long as you're not putting a total disaster in that circumstance, I think it works. Like, if you told me, instead of Max Johnson, we're going to put Bo Nix in that offense, I would hate it.
Okay.
I don't think that offense needs Bo Nix.
Okay.
I think the offense needs somebody who's not going to shoot themselves in the foot. Can Max Johnson do that? I think so. I think he can.
I don't like using a positive negative as an attribute. You're like, is he good enough to not do this? I'm like, give me some more electricity behind your confidence. I don't know.
But isn't that
that's
the
not
same,
a great sign?
No, it's not a great line. But isn't that the same type of argument that we were making going into the national championship with Stetson Bennett?
No, Stetson Bennett made plays downfield. He was athletic. He took advantage of an offense that was talented and, you know, has NFL offensive linemen and a receiving core that was certainly beat up, but he was able to be more than a game manager.
He was, but going into that game, Dan, we were talking about, is he good enough to not throw interceptions? Is he good enough to not make the big mistake? Because in each of his previous games against Alabama, that was his undoing.
Right.
Is he good enough to not do those things? In the championship, he was good enough. They won the championship.
Near the end, yes. He finished a lot stronger than he started and was cruising at altitude with.
So is Max Johnson good enough to not implode the offense is, I think, what I'm asking. I think he can be.
I think the expectations at Texas A&M are such that you need a lot more than just replacement level.
I know. And that's sort of the hang up for me.
Yeah.
So I understand the rationale for fit. I don't think it's a straight up flop, but I do feel like more than anything, I just have faith. I have faith that he's going into a good situation and that because of that, it will work. But who
is that? Who, like, is it the best of Kellen Mond through the air?
Kellen Mond.
Who was solid, but like it was much more the contribution of Kellen Mond was like the totality of his athleticism and ability to change the game with both his legs and his arm at times. Like, he didn't have a high ceiling as a passer though. And
he did.
Max Johnson can't move like Kellen Mond.
No. I don't know, man. I have faith that it's a good circumstance that they're putting him into. But you recall.
Yeah.
When they announced this move, I was like, I don't know.
Would you be pumped if Max Johnson was going to Notre Dame?
No.
Okay.
No. I wouldn't.
Okay. That was dramatic. I liked that.
Thank you.
Who do you want to go to? Who's tantalizing to you next? I've got a polarizing name. How about Adrian Martinez at Kansas State?
Adrian Martinez at Kansas State.
Yeah.
I really want Adrian Martinez to work out somewhere.
Okay.
I feel like he has taken a lot of lumps at Nebraska. A lot of lumps at Nebraska.
For sure.
And some of the criticism that has been directed towards him has not been his fault.
Right.
Talk about a complex scenario. Like I said, with Texas, right, it's not all just on one position. Clearly at Nebraska, it's not all on quarterback. It's just not. There's a lot going on there.
Mm-hmm.
But Adrian Martinez has been somewhat inconsistent. He has shown flashes of being a great playmaker, and at the same time, he has shown a propensity to make the dumb mistake.
Screw it. Quintuple coverage. Screw it.
Let's do it, right? Like, and part of that makes him exciting to watch. But it's also frustrating. There've also been some injuries there. What I kind of like about this is if you want to go to a place where it's not going to be about raw playmaking, it's not going to be about F it, I'm throwing into quintuple coverage. If you're going to go to a place where they're basically going to try and strip you down to the studs and we're going to play sort of vanilla football and we're going to play strong fundamental football,
yeah,
Kansas State with Chris Klieman is sort of that program, isn't it?
Well, they're that program with Skylar Thompson. When Skylar Thompson inevitably got hurt when he did and they turned to Will Howard, it was just stripped down to the studs. There wasn't the build back up. Maybe that was a Will Howard thing. And I'm at faith. I'm at like hesitant faith, I think, that the more stability that's there. But my issue is, how many years deep into the Adrian Martinez experience are we? And when Nebraska's winning, when they need to ice a game, when they need to come back down three and drive, 68 yards with 2.5 minutes left, that Adrian Martinez is still like making the absolute wrong decision in an advantageous moment.
Right.
And
right.
How does that get better in a less open offense, in a less quarterback friendly offense than what Nebraska was operating within? And I know the limitations of Nebraska's offense, right? The shaky offensive line development, all the receivers leaving. I understand all of that. But he's not transferring to a turnkey offense. He's not transferring to an offense that's a quarterback away. He's transferring to an offense that was built around a tiny, mighty, incredible running back. And sure, there should be play action opportunities because of it, but they're not developing NFL receivers every year. I don't know. It seems to me that Kansas State is much more built for a Skylar Thompson solid, if not unspectacular type quarterback. And Adrian Martinez is more, much more of like that wild card.
That being said, though.
Yeah.
The reason I think I'm inclined to say fit.
Okay.
Is because the offense, at least as I've come to know it under Skylar Thompson, when he's been healthy, it very much runs through him. They're putting him in situations as a playmaker to either get free and make a play with his legs,
mm-hmm.
or they're doing enough in the run game that it opens up a throw in the passing game. Skylar mm-hmm. Thompson, this past season, completed, I want to say, close to 70% of his passes.
But it was short stuff.
It was short stuff. It was very kind of like conservative-minded when it came to the passing yeah. game. Yeah. And so I wonder if putting Adrian Martinez in a situation like that, where he's not necessarily looking to throw it 40 yards down the field in triple coverage, but at the same time, you got a couple check downs, here's your progression. I wonder right. if that puts him in more of an advantageous role, where, hey, if you want to go and do something with your legs, here you go. But mm-hmm. at the same time, if you need to dump it off 5 yards over the middle, here's your option. Like, I'm hopeful that the design of the offense will be advantageous to what we've seen from A-Mart over the last 2 years. I'm calling him A-Mart now. Why not?
You're calling him an A-Mart, not to be confused with H-Mart, the wonderful Korean supermarket. Okay.
So I say fit. I say it's a faithful, wow. a very faithful fit. It's a leap of faith to say that it's a fit. But
you think he will be coached to the point where he is picking his spots, not trying to light the world on fire.
That's the line for the moment. I would encourage everybody to just delete me saying this so that it doesn't come back to haunt me in September. But
I think you are who you are. And I've heard very good things about Adrian Martinez as a person. So hopefully it's just a situation.
And that's the thing. Like I hate to do, I love doing these shows like this because people are interested in it. I hate doing shows like this. I'm not rooting against any of these kids, and especially Adrian Martinez. Because everybody likes Adrian Martinez. Everybody. Yeah. He's a wonderful kid. You want to root for him.
Played with like a jaw made of oatmeal by the end of last season.
Yeah, I mean, what a warrior out there. So mm-hmm. I want this to work. I feel like it can work. I hope it does work. Bit of a risk to say fit, but.
Should we rattle off some quickly?
Let's rattle off some quickly. Go ahead.
Spencer Rattler, I have as a fit. I think the culture is going to be better. Yeah. I think a change is good for him. I know his reputation as a human is not the best and teammate is not the best. You know, being away from everybody when things weren't going his way and sort of sulking. I get all of that. I think the energy in Columbia will be good for him. I think Josh Van is back. Takarian Joyner, I believe, is back. So there's talent at receiver. They improved over the course of the second half. I don't know. Something about the energy there seems just like it's going to work out. It's that this is just a big piece that even if they only win, you know, the same number of games, 7-8 games or whatever, like I think he's going to be a big improvement over what they had, and everybody will be happy with the results. Fit.
I'm with you. Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you on
John Reese Plumlee back to quarterback for UCF and Gus Malzahn after losing the job to Matt Corral at Ole Miss. Electric runner.
Good runner. I would presume that's a decent offense for him. Yes.
Yeah, Gus Malzahn, yep.
I think fit.
I'm going fit.
I like fit.
I'm going fit. You don't necessarily need to be able to throw it 40 times to win in the best of what Gus Malzahn's offense can be, which we don't always see. It's been pretty inconsistent as a TV show. Cameron Ward, Washington State.
My man.
Moving up from Incarnate Word.
My man.
The FCS program to Washington State. Jake Dickert, new head coach for Wazoo. And a new level, an absolute new level, not just going to moving up to the FBS level, but to a Power 5 program. Cameron Ward.
I love it. This is perhaps my favorite transfer.
You're full fit.
I'm full fit.
Okay.
So a couple things to know about Cameron Ward. I told you a couple weeks ago, I went down a rabbit hole on YouTube. I watched every Cameron Ward mm-hmm. video on YouTube.
Yeah.
And beyond. He's a bigger kid.
Ooh.
He's a bigger kid.
Yeah.
He's like 6'3", 230-ish, somewhere in that range. He's a big kid.
Mm-hmm.
He is not much of a runner. All right. Not talking so much dual threat here, but
right. That's okay.
A prolific passer. A prolific passer. Completed something like 65% of his passes this past year for Incarnate Word. Okay. Mm-hmm. Level down, but still
yep.
really good. threw for 47 touchdowns this past year to just 10 interceptions, over 4,600 yards passing. So, look, maybe it's a bit of a stretch from the standpoint of he's jumping up levels, he's moving up, but there was a lot of steam on this kid when he entered the transfer portal and what he could bring to any team, frankly. He's from Texas. Like I said, bigger kid. I love this move. So it's faith. It's a lot of faith. You're jumping from one division of college football to another, and that hasn't always worked. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But I like it. I'm all in.
Jaden DeLore gone. So there's no net.
Jaden DeLore gone to Wazoo, Arizona, right?
To Arizona. I have it as a flop. And I don't think it's a I'm a wet blanket. I think it's really difficult to move up a level like this and succeed without having seen what we saw. I mean, the reason why we haven't seen it a lot, FCS to Power 5, is it's super hard. And coaches are not sure that this is a jump that can be a successful one. We saw it with Vernon Adams going from Eastern Washington to Oregon, but we had already seen him bomb on, in a good way, on Pac-12 schools.
I know. But take
Oregon State and Washington.
Take this ride with me. I've already started workshopping calling him the warden. Please.
Okay.
Take this ride with me. It will be fun.
I'm good with you having literal faith and calling him a fit, I believe.
The warden. And Pullman.
Have you looked at Wazoo's schedule?
Let's move on. Let's go with somebody else.
Okay. Just, and I mentioned Pac-12 defenses are not crazy good.
No.
But I want to echo the legendary football mind, Dan Hawkins, and paraphrase him when he was like, this ain't rec league. This is Big 12. Power 5 football. And week 2, Washington State goes to Camp Randall.
Right.
They get Wisconsin, Oregon, and Cal's defense in the first 5 weeks. And say what you will about Cal, but Justin Wilcox's ability to make quarterbacks under and overthink to his advantage is kind of incredible. Oregon should be very talented, especially with how they round out whatever they do in the portal. You know, they're a little thin at secondary, but whatever. The defensive line should be very good. This is not FCS football, baby. This is Oregon, Cal, and Wisconsin.
The warden is coming to town.
I hear you.
Coming to town.
I hear you. But if he is merely average or below average in losses to those teams, that can set you back mentally. And I'm rooting for it, but I don't see it.
Two more here very, very quickly.
Let's.
What do you think about Casey Thompson going to Nebraska?
I have it as a fit. I think fresh start. I think quarterback-friendly offense. He had definite stretches that were unfortunate for Texas, and he got hurt and everything like that. I will see at receiver for the reasons that I've doubted other guys. I still have some doubt there, but that's where I'm saying he's thrown enough passes against high level competition and made enough plays that with Scott Frost, as long as he doesn't make disastrous throws, I think he'll be an improvement.
Yeah.
So I like it.
Actually, I really like it. Final one, Zach Calzada. The Armada is sailing east over to Auburn. Zach Calzada took over for Haynes King. Haynes King got hurt for A&M. Zach Calzada beating up Alabama. He's always got that to his name.
True. Same with Bo Nix.
There were other moments that were like, I don't know if this is the guy. I think this is a flop. I'm not a Calzada believer. I wasn't during the season.
Yeah.
I'm not now. I think he is a replacement level college football quarterback. And he's replacement level.
Yeah.
I think it's a downgrade from Bo Nix, frankly. And he's a guy who's going to give you 50% completion percentage. He's going to throw 2 interceptions a game.
Yeah.
Maybe Brian Harsin can strip him down to the studs to maybe some extent like he did with Bo Nix.
But talking new offensive coordinator from the NFL, right? Mike Bobo moves on, which is fine. New quarterback, new offensive coordinator, right? There's no baggage there. But
no baggage. Like, maybe they can find some way to strip his game down to make him less mistake prone. We've seen that happen. It wouldn't be the first time that's happened in college football. It happens all the
Correct.
Time.
Yep.
So to that extent, I have faith that they can make him better, but I just feel like with what we saw in year 1 for A&M, have all that talent around you and still kind of leave a lot to be desired does not feel like a great circumstance to me. So I've got this as a flop.
So Auburn's current quarterback room, and or at least additions and conversations around, because whatever, it's always fluid, but it's TJ Finley, who I think at this point we know what we have in TJ Finley as a power five, higher power five level college quarterback, finishing out the season, almost beating Alabama in that very strange overtime
game. They should have gone for it. But
absolutely.
Brian Harsin wanted to play the
TJ Finley.
Yeah.
Zach Calzada, and I think Oregon's fourth string quarterback, Robbie Ashford, transferring in, who's from down there, who is certainly a much more mobile option. I think played baseball, dual sport guy as well. I'm not there with the brain trust that this is even a faith situation where you're like, yep, this situation is better. Now, the offensive line, I think, improved over the course of last year. They're good at running back. Obviously, that's a nice option that, you know, you can key in on if you're a defense and get some plays in play action if you're Auburn out wide. But I don't know, receiver wasn't there last year, and they seem even thinner this year at receiver. I don't have the depth chart in front of me, so maybe I'm forgetting somebody. But nobody's really jumping out to me in terms of, like, obvious playmaker at receiver, like, you know, Tank Bigsby and Jarquez Hunter did last year for Auburn. So, hopefully some young quarterback is the guy who emerges at some point in the season. But I don't see it. I think we know what we have. And I think that was Zach Calzada was in a better offensive situation at A&M. We kind of got to see it. So
I would quite literally take everybody on this list over Zach Calzada. Maybe outside
everybody?
Not Tommy DeVito, not Jaden DeLora or Jack Plummer.
Tommy DeVito probably had a better season in 2019. I mean, he had like 19 touchdowns and 4 picks in Syracuse. I think it was 2019 where they won a bunch of games, right?
There are exceptions here. Okay.
Yeah.
But not many. Would I take Michael Penix over Zach Calzada?
What a weird place we're going to finish this show on. For what team?
For Auburn.
Would I take Michael Penix? I'm closing my eyes because I really need to get to that place if you're watching this on verballers.com. Would I take Michael Penix at Auburn over Zach Calzada? No, because of the injury history, I would not.
But what about the talent?
I mean, we're just going to flash the Ohio State game and we're going to say that kind of defines, I don't think it defines it. I'm going to say Calzada over Penix.
I think I'm probably Team Calzada on that one. But
Okay.
Write in. Let us know what you think here about this. Again, as Dan just alluded.
January haters show.
As Dan just alluded, you can watch the video. You can see all of our machinations on video. If you go to verballers.com, you can watch the full episode for our premium verballers. Don't forget, you can also get access to this show, all of our shows a little bit early, get access to our Discord, which is a great place to hang with other college football fans and verballers at that. So verballers.com is where you can check that out. I didn't mention it at the top, but Solid Giveaway is going strong for another couple weeks. You have until Valentine's Day to enter to win a signed Reggie Bush mini helmet. I might put my name in.
I mean, it would be weird if we said there's a giveaway and that, oh, Dan won.
We can make it up like Joe Smith won. Congratulations, sure. Joe. Yay, yeah. Joe. You'll see it behind me here in the backdrop. SolidGiveaway.com. It's free to enter. You just got to give us a little bit of your time, go through a few short steps, and that'll get you in the running to win that Reggie Bush signed mini helmet. And finally, last but not least, we are going to be doing a podcast every Tuesday and Thursday, at least on the public feed. So if you haven't already, if you're just passing through, wondering how can we support these guys, we like the show, please do subscribe, please do follow, please do rate, please do review. All that stuff really does help. It helps spread the word, helps blast us out there to a broader audience for people who might be interested in college football.
Ty has a Peloton now. He has subscription fees, and you need to help him stay in shape. Come on.
Why not?
The Solid Verbal is a Solid Verbal Media production, hosted and produced by Dan Rubenstein and Ty Hildenbrandt. Solid Verbal Podcast Network, supported by listeners like you, especially supported by listeners like Shay, Carl, Cole, Jigga Joe Freezy, The Pun Devil, The Ween, and Doogie Feeney.
That was very PBS Kids of you. I love it.
Thank you. Thank you. I've been workshopping that for a little bit now.
Very good. We appreciate all of our footballers.
Yeah. By the way, CJ Verdell declared, the Oregon running back. We mentioned him in that running back room, and Travis Dye going to USC. So CJ Verdell will not be receiving the ball from Bo Nix.
It's all going to be Bo Nix all the time.
All Bo.
Bo knows Oregon football. For that guy over there, my good friend Dan Rubenstein, for myself, Ty Hillebrand, thank you so much for downloading, for listening, for playing along at home. We'll be back on Thursday. In the meantime, stay safe, stay warm, stay solid.
Peace.